Checking in with State Representative Tacky Chan of Quincy on a Tuesday Tacky Talk edition. Hey, Tacky.
Yeah, Tacky Tuesday this week, Joe. Good to see you as we close in on the day before the last day. And since we don't talk to each other on Wednesdays, you know, we could talk to each other in the middle of the session if you want tomorrow, you know, as we close in on the final session day. So, you know, happy Tuesday, folks, and a muggy, muggy morning.
Yeah, of course, I guess the big news is happened yesterday, right? The budget has been signed.
Yeah, budget's been signed by the governor. We gave her the 10 calendar days to allow for vetoes. We did read the vetoes last night. Not very exciting, I have to be honest. She didn't really go after anyone's local earmarks. Disagreements between her budget recommendation and our funding recommendation, not surprising. This happens a lot. The only thing caught our eye locally that affects us is the sewer rate relief fund. She vetoed the $1.5 million for sewer rate relief. So those of us in the MWRA district does get help from taxpayers statewide on our sewer bills, sewer and water bills, particularly the sewer side, on providing you a bit of rate relief by subsidizing the MWRA every so often. If we have extra money lying around, we'll make it a bigger subsidy. But, you know, we generally put something in here. This has always been a priority for the speaker since before he was long before the speaker. I remember when, you know, Ron was doing this back in the 90s to address the very high water sewer bills, especially from the Deer Island project. Mm-hmm. That is totally on your water and sewer rates, as well as all the other big capital projects around the state, ranging from the three pump stations in Quincy, the sewer pump stations, as well as the high pressure lines, all the way down to the Metro West area with guarding covered and protected reservoir systems, as well as monitoring. Most people don't realize that the MWRA system has constant monitoring regarding the water quality in the system on the way from the west to the east. So MWRA ratepayers cross-subsidize each other across the state, but in particular, the large capital projects is something that the speaker has, you know, spent many, many years his time in the legislature to make sure there is a subsidy assistance for all MWRA ratepayers, including us. So that's the one that caught my eye in the budget. I was like, huh, okay. But the rest of its stuff doesn't scream, you know, real problematic. And mm-hmm. we're probably going to start overrides this afternoon and probably take them right into tomorrow.
Do you think that that cut would translate to higher sewer rates for folks?
Yeah. Okay. It's probably something you won't, because the way the rate's set up, because your water usage isn't consistent month to month, isn't like your water sewer is like, you know, every month it's like an exact buck. So you it's one of those like benefits you don't truly see because there's no way to properly gauge it.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So do you think the legislature will override that veto?
Yeah, we'll do that. Yeah, we're definitely going to override that. I know. In fact, it's a Ron priority. I'm very confident it's going to make it onto the floor.
Okay. Yeah, I remember. I mean, when the Boston Harbor cleanup first started, that was the rates just skyrocketed to help pay for the sewage treatment plant.
Yep, absolutely. And they're always going to be a future capital project because of the nature of clean water and proper sewage. And again, it's not just necessarily in Quincy. It's cross-subsidized across the entire rate system. So, right. you know, you can say, oh, well, you know, why am I helping somebody somewhere else? Well, they just paid for all our new stuff here about 15 years ago. So, you know, that capital debt's being paid by folks that don't live in Quincy. And it goes the other way around. And, you know, in the housing bond bill, you know, we had some language to do some MWRA expansion south of Quincy, some grant programs to help city and towns out that can hook up to the MWRA system. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a development issue. You can't get water and sewer hook up. Well, you're not going to build new housing.
Right, exactly. Yeah, I know that's another priority for the speaker as well. What was the, do you know how much that was from offhand?
I think it was $150 million in bond money.
That sounds right. Yeah.
Okay. It was bond. So it'll be a 15 to 30 year distribution, depending on which part of the bond cycle it is. The bond bill has multiple expiration dates. And then off the top of my head, I can't remember what the expiration date on that part is. But
yeah, I was just curious. And it's, you know, this, every community is a little different. Like Quincy is MWRA water and sewer, some have just sewer.
Yes, we go to Braintree, Weymouth, Holbrook. I mean, it's all different. I believe they're all sewer.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think Holbrook, Randolph.
And Braintree, yes, the Tri-Town Water District, yeah.
They share that reservoir, which needs occasional dredging. And it's this funky three-community management system.
Right.
system, which, as you can all imagine, folks having three communities trying to manage something jointly where they're trying to, in their best interest, to make sure they shift as much cost to someone else.
Exactly. Yeah, actually, they're in, almost done with the new treatment plant for that reservoir, which all three communities are paying a portion of.
Yeah, the big one of the biggest fight is actually apportionment.
Yep, exactly. Yep.
If you use more, you want equal shares. If you use less, you want apportionment.
That's exactly, yes.
Stuff folks don't have to think about. But you can, I think you all can appreciate listening the challenges of multi-government share protecting their own ratepayers, which is not always appreciated by the other community's residents regarding how that would work. Because I'm sure if we offered the residents, would you like to do a portion share equally, or do you want to do based, I'm sorry, do you want equal share, or do you want apportionment based on total usage? And you're the bigger community, you know what the answer is going to be.
Right. No, obviously. Yeah. You don't want to pay for as much as you use.
So,
Regional school districts, I'm sure, face the same issue.
yeah, and Chapter 70 money does help pay for regional school districts. This is something that's not often talked about. I mean, City of Quincy gets about $40 million plus in Chapter 7 money, 70 money for themselves for education. But the regional school district, I think it's, I don't remember, I think it's like a, I think the Aggie gets about a man five. I have to look it up. But I mean, you know, all the different regional school districts get different amounts in their apportionment of Chapter 70 because of the population they serve. They who grew up in smaller communities may have gone to a regional school district.
Yeah, well, absolutely. There's, down the Cape is a good example for the Nauset system. There's several towns in that system.
Yeah, and as a result, you have friends from all over the place. And for some folks, you know, even for elementary school is a longer drive.
Absolutely. Yep. So I guess some highlights from the budget, online lottery.
Yeah, y'all know I ain't too warm on this, but
That's why I brought it up, Jackie.
I know, but it's an inevitability. Despite my personal feelings on a lot of things in life, the reality is that the world's moving in a certain direction, whether I like it or not. And this is kind of, you know, getting older, I think is the way to put it, right? I mean, you know, I'm like everyone else. You know, life moves around me and it does move. And just because I have, you know, set in my way, so to speak, in certain thoughts, you know, the reality is that casino gaming's here. We have sports betting online. It is the lottery needs to come to the 21st century, and online lottery will be that. Now, you know, it still has to be in state. I know there's VPNs and there's a way to get around it. So there's constantly needing security teams to make sure they can keep the person in state that's wagering in state. And you know, the lottery is going to be in charge of regulatory oversight regarding the how this will roll out, and it's going to be through a private vendor. Not the state lottery is not going to run it itself like it normally. The private vendor. So that'd be a big process for that to get the private vendor. And then sometime in 6 months to a year, if not sooner, yeah, probably 6 months to a year. It's going to take a little time to get the regulations up. But once the regulations are up, I mean, the bids will go out and, you know, you're going to have the ability to wager, particularly your lotto tickets on an app on your phone or go onto a website and create an account. Again, similarly to other forms of wagering, we're not doing credit cards. I think because you can't do credit cards on your lottery terminals currently, so that should carry over. We can't do, you know, like horse racing, online horse wagering would be some type of account wagering. You have to deposit money into an account, and similar to sports betting, deposit money into an account,
I
and
see.
then you withdraw. And you know what limits they allow to do, and people on wagering we set by regulation. So we'll let the lottery figure that stuff out.
Yeah, okay. So we'll still fall under the treasurer.
Yeah, state lottery is under the treasurer.
Okay.
And there's an advisory commission for the convenience stores in particular to weigh in on the matter. Obviously, the biggest concern is that it'll shift people from going to the convenience store and buying their scratch tickets and their lottery tickets. But I mean, people like to take a coin or the back of a key and scratch their tickets in the state. It's still the super majority, more almost two-thirds plus of all lottery sales is a physical scratch ticket in the
Oh,
state.
yeah, it's instant gratification, you know, one way or the
It'll be intriguing to see if that translates to online gratification. It may or may not. I mean,
other.
the physical action sometimes is a, you know, part of the experience, right? I can't tell you guys what it'll be like in terms of like what people will accept as a as an experience on transferability, but most definitely lottery tickets being by, you know, particularly if you got a major jackpot and you don't have time to stop at a 7-Eleven for whatever reason. I can see lottery tickets when it gets a certain size, you know, jobs are exploding by people buying them online.
As I understand it, you're going to have to be 21, not 18, to buy them online. Is that right?
Yeah, it keeps it consistent. I believe, yeah, it keeps it consistent with the other forms of gambling
I
online.
see. Okay, interesting.
So, I mean, it's kind of, well, we'll see how it goes. Like you said, you don't need that warm to this idea, but you know, time moves on, folks, and you know, whether I like it or not, too, we've reached that stage where, as I told the convenience stores a decade ago, this is an inevitability. It's just that you guys gotta have to get ready for the inevitability. We can't. That's just a fact. So. So yeah.
It's going to raise, the estimate I read was $100 million in the first year.
Yeah, we'll see. I mean, it actually more than that, actually, to be honest with
Really?
you.
Okay.
Yeah, it's all going to early education grants, which is a priority of the Senate president. So I can, you know, creates a dedicated funding mechanism. So it's technically outside the budget
Gotcha. Okay.
because it's dedicated to a specific program, grants. So the grant program can change every year depending on the revenue availability. So this is actually not baked into the base of the budget.
I see. Okay. Also, free community college.
Yeah, with pilot year number two. You know, this is basically a 4 or 5 year pilot program to see how it works, and it seems to be successful for adults, young adults who were not able to complete a higher education of any form, to be able to go back to community college. And you know, we'll see what it takes. The problem with these things, it takes time to see how it unfolds. So, I mean, it takes, you know, 2 years, you know, for an associate program, maybe, you know, more than that, depending on the program you're in, or more than one program you're in. And, you know, it's like it's targeted towards, you know, working adults that couldn't get to school, you know, right after high school. So, you know, it seems to be very successful, and we are having a changing work environment. And right now we have a labor shortage. So, you know, barrier to entry in some of these professions is a necessity for an associate degree.
Interesting. Yeah, I think 25 is the age, 25 and older.
Yeah, young adults, but you know, obviously well outside the college, traditional college entry age.
What else? Trying to think what else. Oh, free lunches. Yeah, breakfast and lunches continues.
Well, that's one of those things that's going to be very hard to take away once you put it in place. I mean, this is another cost burden that we take off cities and towns that do provide breakfast and lunches. There is the summer lunch program as well, which is very important. We all learned this during COVID, where you know the great folks at Quincy Public Schools and all school systems were trying to figure out how to get these lunches to families in need, you know, to make that happen. And you know, we expand that to everybody. Those who watch the news, you know, it doesn't matter what community you're in. You know, a kid unable to play for lunch or breakfast at school has a lot of nutritional challenges because this is, you know, you go like 8 days, 8 hours, no food, five, you know, even more than that, if depending on your travel time and circumstances at home. And then, you know, obviously, there's this shame involved. There's this kind of like stigmatization that this kid can't pay for, you know, lunch. And, you know, this takes that away. You know, ensures that, you know, everybody has a chance to get food. You know, nowadays nutritionists run school systems, so it's like healthy food, not like you and I and like sticky cheese pizza and frozen milk. I'm not kidding about the frozen milk. That was actually a thing at St. Ann's. We had frozen milk.
Would you have to do wait till it defrosted?
It was just a milksicle. It was trapped in the carton. It's one of those vivid memories I have of milk. But you know, at BC High, you know, it's not public school, folks, I know, but BC High, I mean, you had a slice of greasy cheese frozen pizza that as a high school teenager, you're like, oh, this is great. But obviously we try to not encourage that kind of diet anymore. And it's much more balanced meal. And I, you know, when I last visited Sag Harbor School, when we announced this program with the
Yes.
speaker and the wisdom chair, Aaron Merkowitz, I looked at the lunches, like, this is like healthy food.
Yeah, it was, I mean, I saw fresh fruits in there and things that you would never see in our age, right?
Yeah, very balanced diet as opposed to the junk we got. And I'm shocked that two of us are still kicking.
It's amazing. It hasn't taken us out yet, I know. I like to think I've improved my eating habits since becoming an adult.
Oh, the sheer volume of frozen pizzas I had in slices. I knew they were frozen. I worked actually in the BC High kitchen, so I did the after school, and I did the morning, and I've done after school in the cafeteria, working, you know, mopping floors and taking orders. So
Yes. Yeah.
I've seen wheels in the freezer. But again, it's a different time. And again, it's a great program. I mean, it does so many things well. It's a long-term investment also in our kids. Kids' health is an investment.
Yeah, but it's not cheap. It's, I think I recall, $170 million. So it's a considerable chunk of money.
It is, but it's well money worth spent
Of course.
in the bigger, longer picture. And again, I remind taxpayers in Quincy, this is a shared cost among all taxpayers. Not it's coming off your property taxes and
Oh no.
shared among
Right.
all taxpayers in the state. So, I am getting some grief about property taxes like everyone else. And just remind everybody, I mean, local aid, school breakfasts, senior centers, libraries, the state coughs up a good chunk of change that's part of your city budget, which is shared cost among all taxpayers in the Commonwealth, not just your pro and off your property taxes. So
Right.
you got to beef regarding anything going on at the local level. Please do take it up with your councilors and your mayor. But I mean, the delegation, particularly when we're in okay economic situations like we do with the MBRA rate relief, which we talked at the very onset of this podcast, are putting it funding into programs that you traditionally and rightly thought was a city paid program in the school. That's correct thinking. It's just in the last few years that cost has been shifted to all taxpayers, particularly post-COVID. And some of these pandemic programs we've made permanent. But I mean, it also shows the changing of times, and we have the capacity to bake into the budget.
Right, exactly. Yeah, otherwise, property taxes, local taxes would be much higher.
Oh, you can take it up with the local guys, right? But we've definitely doing our part, our best on providing services and take some of the cost burdens off the cities and towns
Yeah.
as we can. And we're doing this at a 5% income tax rate. Those who remember, income tax rate was once 5.95, as high as was it 6.95 at one point during the Great
Was it
Great.
that high?
Was it 6.25? I think
Yeah,
it's
that sounds right. Yeah, 6.25.
during the Great Financial Crisis before my time. Well,
Yep.
before my time, when we had the massive crash, the end of the Massachusetts miracle year, well before my time. But we're doing it at a much lower tax rate in terms of income taxes. And again, capital gains is no longer part of the base of the budget. It goes straight to the rainy day fund. So we're balancing our budget, on fees, income tax, the sales tax. But even like the gas tax goes to a dedicated trust fund. It's not baseline budget. It goes straight to road and bridge work, or using that money to leverage federal money for road and bridge work. And things like your car access tax doesn't come to us. Your car access tax goes to cities and towns.
Right.
So, we're trying to manage a budget where we've had declining percentage on income tax over the course of decades in terms of percentages, and then no longer, using certain income sources like other states do as that's volatile, like capital gains. And and then even sales tax, meals tax is very volatile right now because people are really pinched, and that affects the local meals tax as well, because senior towns get 0.75% if they choose to from your meals tax, and then we get to 6.25. But even with the fact we're projecting some pinching, we're able to still deliver.
Right. Speaking of taxes, the tax-free weekend's coming up in August. I forget which weekend it is, but
10 and 11
okay.
is the reason why I remember that.
You gonna do some shopping, Tacky?
Jackie has another day for himself.
Look for a Mitchell local retailer.
Yeah, you guys can interpret it how you all want to interpret it. Let's just say that my gray hairs are not coming in fast enough. But no, it's a free tax weekend. Again, we bake in probably $30 to $40 million for revenue loss. Again, that's already been baked into the budget. It goes up every year, not because I think of more people, it's because the price of things go up. So inflation goes up. The sales tax is tied to inflation because it's a percentage of the sale. As a result, our projected, I won't say loss, but projected no income from sales tax.
Right.
Our adjustment, is going to go up as well. So it's just logical, right? If you're paying $5 for something at the same sales tax rate, 10 years ago, and it doubles in price, obviously the expectation is the sales tax also doubles because you paid something double in price. Well, that's kind of the big change, is that inflation's been so high that baking in non-expectation revenue. It's not a loss. It's
Yeah,
not
how do you calculate a negative, right? Because it was never there. Yeah.
never there. Non-expectation. It's probably going to be around, $30 to $40 million, maybe a little more, but that's all right. It's something that taxpayers and customers and the retailers and everybody likes a lot. We've done it for many years.
It's a law now, right?
Law and the legislature sets the date every cycle. So, yeah, I mean, and there are limits. $2,500 is the cap on a single purchase, meaning you can't buy a car and get a sales tax reduction. So you're going to buy a big TV, keep it under $25. And it also applies to certain online retailers. Actually, I think all online retailers, provided that transaction happens the day of.
Right. Yeah. It's just that does not applicable to utilities, things like that.
No, cell phones, utilities doesn't apply. You guys online, you just gotta be a little bit careful because the reason I say that is because online retailers won't charge you until actual delivery of product. It's a cash, these people we call cash on delivery, COD. But I mean, essentially that's what it is, a COD, credit on delivery, I guess is the way to put it down.
Okay. Very good. Should we talk a little bit about, because come August 1st, just a couple of days, there's going to be a change in the emergency shelter system.
Yeah, we're implementing a 90-day rule now. There are some exceptions. People are actively looking for a training program, severe disabilities, kids that are severely ill. I mean, we do have a bunch of exceptions, but we're going to implement a 90-day rule now. So, you can claim a lot of people are going to fall in an exception, but I'm going to tell you that's not going to be the case. It's the rotation needs to happen. So, yeah, so we're going to implement this rule, and then we'll see what happens. As you all know already, this has become unsustainable. There's no space, and there's not enough money. I mean, it's a combination of problems. And you all heard that, that the governor is willing to provide, transportation, aka play tickets this time to
Yeah,
anybody.
it surprised me when I read that. Yeah.
Yeah, but we already were transporting people out, just not by plane.
Right. Yeah. Yeah.
So you need a bus ticket somewhere, we were going to get you a bus ticket. As long as you can show us you have like a place to go, not
Right.
just oh. And it's really sad. So me and John Keenan both made surprise visits to ENC to do another walkthrough. We did it unannounced, and it is pregnant women and children. I mean, I was actually very surprised how few men, fathers or brothers or whatever. There was no male component. And there was some men sitting outside. But very rare. This is a group of folks who are family unit. They go out of the way to make sure the family unit stays together. That's why it's very unusual to see these families separated. They move as a family unit. So I was a little surprised to see, unlike my first visit there about 8 months ago, 9 months ago, that it was very clear to try to hold family units together, these families migrating, but something's changed. And it was tough to visit for an hour just to see, what's going on and what's, how desperate things have come regarding inflationary costs, because obviously it affects them, and access to things for kids and medicine. And they are still vaccinating, they are still checking for infectious diseases, they're still doing all that work, and they're holding the rule on the pregnancy issue. So you must be pregnant. There is no wiggle room there. And but there's, housing is a problem. There's no place to place folks, as you already know. I don't have to explain this to anybody on this call. And they need a destination. And I think this is the challenge that they have. So they already told us at the ENC that the Welcome Center is like, you got a place to go. They help try to figure out how to get you there.
Okay.
But that's always been in place. It's just you don't have anywhere to go, then doesn't help you. And then there are processing working papers. There's some pro bono lawyers coming in. Processing, rapidly processing working papers. The problem, of course, is waiting for the feds to get back to us. So, I mean, you can process all the paperwork you want. It's just waiting for the feds to get their end done and, report back, that it's been approved or denied. So, sometimes you just want an answer, not necessarily the answer you want to hear, but we need an answer.
Right. Yeah. I know I was speaking to the folks at the Career Center too. And one of the biggest obstacles, of course, is the language barrier. You know, these folks can't speak English, they can't write. So, I mean, that's a huge hindrance to getting a job.
Yeah, many of them speak Haitian Creole, and this is the The challenge here, and we do have adult basic education as part of the budget, which is English language classes and GED classes, and we have a lot of not-for-profits like Quincy Resources and others around the state that does provide English classes. There's just no coordinated plan of how to manage this, and that's kind of the complaint we all have in the legislature, is that we have a lot of human service organizations around the state that know how to do this. But there's also some other logistical issues. Put aside the funding issue, right? If you're in a welcome center for 10 days, 10 days of English classes become somewhat problematic because you don't have continued redundancy. And that's kind of the thing. Quincy in particular, because of the nature it's a welcome center, if you do like English classes or try to do some basic early ed for the kids, they're not going to be long enough to get the full benefit of it.
No, it's everything's being done piecemeal right now. Exactly.
Yeah, if some of the other communities, they don't have a strong human service backbone as we do, are unable to provide English classes, for example, for the adults, and get the kids enrolled in school or some kind of like early ed program. And this Department of Second Education and Second, according, my understanding is the Department of Secondary Education won't allow classroom style teaching in a non-school environment.
I see.
So kids at the Welcome Center cannot get a conventional public school style education. And again, they're only there for like 10-ish days,
It's
or
not enough time.
even if it's like 2 or 3 weeks, folks, that's not enough time,
No,
right?
think about you trying to learn a foreign language in that amount of time. It's not going to
But
happen.
yeah, it's not going to happen. On top of the stress of the whole traveling yet here, not knowing what's going to happen to you, constantly nervous what's going on with your kids, your priority is to take care of them before you take care of yourself. It's a lot of stress, and some of the health issues we heard about was dehydration. They've obviously not had a great diet because prioritization of who gets food first in the family unit has resulted in digestive issues that they couldn't process certain solid foods properly because they've gone so long. And like I said, it's you or your child, who gets priority.
The oldest one, probably, right?
Yeah, this is a family unit mentality. Some of the adults, have had some gastrointestinal problems because of the fact that, they prioritize who eats, and, you're carrying kids with you.
I'd not heard that before.
I was surprised too. So protein shakes and, other types of electrolyte liquids are kind of really important. They're kind of running out of that stuff. This is sad. I mean, I know there's a lot of, folks out there that really, really care about this situation. And it's just, I don't have answers. I don't think anybody has an answer how to manage it. We also have the other side of it, just folks that have just, oh, I care, but.
Yeah, I know what you mean. What's going to happen to that ENC center at the end of the year, Jackie? Do you know?
I understand the contract runs out at some point end of the year, if not into January 2025, and the ENC is scheduled to close. I'm actually pretty nervous, as well as the rest of the delegation, about the ENC closing just in general because of the fact that it's a large piece of property with very old buildings that has been very well maintained. I mean, you can't argue with outside maintenance. It looks great on the outside. And, general security issue. I mean, any abandoned piece of property becomes a potential public nuisance. So I'm actually not as concerned about the migrant issue because the security there with the migrants, the police is aware of it, the local, they have their own security on site. As well, there's people there. People can look out for other people, but once the Welcome Center closes and the school is already closed, it'll be completely abandoned, and that's not a good recipe.
Right. Yeah. It's 21 acres, so it's a big piece of property to manage.
Yeah, and also wildlife, right? People may have noticed, there are foxes living under the stadium benches. Right. So you don't want wildlife to kind of, I can't believe I'm saying this in an urban environment, but yeah, you don't want wildlife to just take over the place.
Well, I mean, it was a farm years ago, so
Well, yeah, actually, my part of Walsall was also a farm, I was told by people significantly older than I am. We used to deliver newspapers down my house when it was not actually a house yet. It was more of like a shack. But, but yeah, so I mean, I have a lot of concerns, and it's just very strange words coming to my mouth saying I'm worried about wildlife taking over. But it's you think about it, it makes sense. Fenced in area, buildings are fairly secure. You got plenty of bushes and brushes that you can, hang out in as an animal. You don't want to make it a place where things like Coyote or whatnot decide it's a good place to just spend the night.
No, that'll become a neighborhood nuisance real fast. Yeah, exactly.
Absolutely. So, I mean, the delegation's going to try to have a conversation soon of the ANC with the long-term planning of the property. I do know the mayor has some interest regarding, 55 and above housing and all that. You guys can take it up with the mayor about how you're going to pay for buildings built in the 70s. I think the library is the last building built, and that was, I think, the early mid-80s. We're talking not young structures here that had minimal internal maintenance because of budget problems with the property, and it's sitting on a flood zone. I am perfectly aware. Residents, those guys who live on Sachem Street and those areas down that section, anything you do on Eastern Nazarene equals water in your basements.
Yes, that's right. Yeah, and they've yeah, since they've updated the flood maps too, it's all included in that now.
Yeah, I'm aware of it. I remember taking these calls when I worked for Michael Morrissey too. I mean, I'm very aware of the situation. So, any kind of development going in there is definitely going to be a conservation commission question mark, as well as the residents' negative impact on any additional water going their direction, because they're on the other side. One side's the ocean where the drains are trying to get out, and the other side is ENC that goes downhill because it's higher up. So, yeah, I am aware of it, everybody. It's not like I do not know the topography, and but have to take up your ward counselor, remind the ward counselor that what you do up there affects them in a really bad way, and remind the mayor as well. So, I do understand that city has no plans and. Exactly. I mean, they have ideas, but I'm not seeing a plan. And this could take a long time. This could take, I don't know how long before someone has a strategy. But in the near term, I'm very concerned about, when the Welcome Center does close, what's going to happen to property maintenance as well as general security.
Sure. With August coming up, so is August Moon.
Yeah, the 18th, 11 a.m. To about 3 p.m. Noon time is the official kickoff. Clyden Street again in front of the high school and the YMCA. Great job by Philip Chung and Communication Resources on the incredible work on Continuations Festival. It's one of the largest continually running festivals in the South Shore, especially in the state at this point. Attracts about 20,000 odd people, give or take. It's a family event. It's designed to stroll. You stroll in, you have some fun, you watch some shows, you eat some food, you visit some booths. And then you stroll on out, and that event's always been that way. You want to come in, have a good time, and move on out. It's good if the summer's like been anything it's been so far, it's gonna be blistering.
Yeah, let's hope not, but it could be, so be prepared for that for sure. Yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. And I've gone to every August Moon Festival in terms of setting up booth and passing out the tacky fans, and we schedule like around like 12:30-ish to open the ice pops up, which vanish in 1 hour. But I've been affiliated with August Moon Festival since 1996, so one form or another, and it's a signature event in South Shore. I mean, it's also the same weekend as the Cambodian Water Festival.
No, I didn't know that.
Yeah, that's up in Lowell. So we want to traverse like literally across the state from my standpoint. And you can attend two types of summer events.
Interesting. Okay. So it'll be fun stuff coming up still. Summer's not over just yet.
No, it's a little slow down. But yeah, I mean, Quincy events are interesting because once you get to July 4th, things take a little bit of a breather. Then you work your way to August Moon, and it'll take a lot of a breather until after Labor Day, and then we start to some Quincy. So the cycle's changed a bit because COVID has moved the cycle around with some of these organizations. But I've lived in a pattern my whole life. I mean, I think this is the kind of thing that people don't appreciate or understand is that I live around a legislative schedule. So we work at the speaker's whim, so to speak, regarding the scheduling of sessions. Then I have to have some of my own hearing sessions, the chairman. Then we have several caucuses that we have to work under schedules for. Then obviously you have a lot of events, and then just because you get the summer off because it happens, we're obviously going straight to August 1st. But then again, we're doing the campaign mode from August 1st to November, and then we do swearing in to get swearing in day first Wednesday up to the first Monday in January. So it's a schedule you have a lot of control over, but you also don't have a lot of control over, right? It's kind of one of those quirky parts of life where, yeah, I have a lot to say of my time, but I also don't have a lot to say of my time. And it's also an event schedule at home. I don't plan these events. I just have to try to get to them, or at least make a donation. for my campaign account to these various events, and can I get to all of them? There's a practicality question. Can I actually physically get everywhere? And sometimes the answer is no. And then it becomes like, I'm not insulting people, I just can't get to all of them.
What is going on with the wind turbines in Nantucket Sound? A second
Oh.
one has now broken.
Yeah, stress test on the fiberglass. Yeah, no, this, I look, I mean, you're building over 300 windmills. This is going to be bound to happen. Thankfully, it's not a state project. It is a state project because we are buying electricity, but it is a private project. They're going to have to eat the cost as part of the project because we have a fixed rate contract with the windmills. And I'm fairly confident that they know that there's a built-in cost loss associated with construction. And it's only real two companies on the planet that does this in large scale that isn't in China, which is GE Vernova and Siemens AG out of Europe. GE Vernova is actually a spinoff of GE, General Electric. So, I mean, those are your two mega players in terms of this side of the coastline, in windmill construction. So, I hate to say it, but this is going to happen as natural course of construction. As they go up, there'll be stress tests on the fly, and things happen. But again, I'm not an engineer. I just general idea of how this works, as you can tell. I'm not an expert on these things, but I think people will appreciate, given the fact there's some attention on these windmills, exactly the size and scope of the project. I mean, these are ginormous blades. And people are under some probably impression at one time these are windmills from 40 years ago where they're like giant steel blades. No, they're fiberglass.
Which, is what boat hulls are made out of.
Yeah, they're lighter because they can catch the wind better, as opposed to heavy steel that you're probably all thinking from like 40 years ago. So, this is something I think people can learn about now because sadly things break.
Washing up on the beach. Oh, look at that.
And yeah, washing on the beach and collecting it, at least, some of it will float as opposed to metal to just sink to the bottom.
True. Yeah, I guess there's
That.
that.
But I mean, the engineer's gonna have to sort this out. And we'll tell you, if you're building 300 plus of these things, like any construction, it's you're also in the open water, things are gonna happen.
I bring this up because our last tacky talk, we got into the discussion between fusion and fission and.
Yeah, I clearly had no idea what I was talking about, folks. Just delete that part of that episode of both
Oh
tactics.
no, that's going to live on forever.
Oh, tacky field physics. It's very clear. Fusion mushes stuff together, fission breaks it apart. I had it backwards.
You did? Okay.
So fission is where you take a heavy element and you bang it out into smaller elements. The separation of the larger, heavier element causes heat, causes energy.
An atom blaster.
Yeah, fusion is the other way around. You take two lighter elements, jam them together, become a heavier element, and then the energy released from the jamming together is what creates the energy. The residual energy from the crushing. So fission tends to be cheaper because the amount of energy put in to break off it, break an atom apart, namely uranium, a heavy atom, to smaller parts, smaller elements, the output. Input output works out well in terms of energy you need. The problem with fusion is that the ability to mush things together, the pushing elements together, the amount of energy to put in doesn't equate to the energy coming out. There's not enough energy coming out to justify it. And fission reaction is once you start the process, it kind of, I won't say take care of itself, but it moves at a steady state. Fusion needs to do the same thing. It's got to be able to, once you start the process, you can control the continuation of which. So, when you have something you can slap apart as opposed to mush together, it has two different impacts.
Interesting. Okay. Well, we need to Bill Nye the science guy here last week.
Yeah, no, there's got to be a physics teacher you can find that don't ask a politician science.
Well, thank you for looking
There's a
that up.
lot, well, there's a lot of jokes I just said in there, which I won't get into, because I'm not sure there's politicians I can think of I can make fun of from there. But yeah, no, I did take a quick look up, and it was like, oh yeah, I got this thing backwards. So I don't pretend to be a science expert, but I do like to think I know a little bit about
Very good. Well, thank you for that, Jackie. There'll be a quiz later.
Just bringing a science teacher, Joe. I'm sure there's one in your Rolodex. You have high school kids coming in. One of them's got to be a physics major.
Oh, I'm sure. Actually, yeah, we do have some interns from the high school that'll be here soon, so we'll check in with them.
Yeah, actually, let's talk about that for a second. That's a great program by you guys to get folks interested in media, particularly in the high school level. I mean, we're joking about, we always joke about our age and whatnot, but remember, I mean, a lot of places had high school radio, right? And that was a lot of teenagers first got the introduction into media where you had vinyl records and you would do news breaks and federal FCC, Federal Communication Commission regulations on how you broadcast and what you broadcast and when you broadcast. And the radio was more available for kids to intern into television stations.
No, absolutely. Yeah, I am a product of that myself, so sure.
Yeah, and it's a great program, particularly in the era where people think they're filmmakers because they have a cell phone. There are some great folks that can do things with tech, but let's be frank about it. I mean, the vast majority of us are better off in more an educational environment, teaching folks how production works and what's actually engaging, putting a show together and the logistics of which you're doing. It's one thing to film yourself on endless YouTube and TikToks regarding various things, and another thing to actually put together a show that is actually, in a format.
Yes, not everybody can be a producer or a journalist. You need formal training.
Yeah, and it's great that QATV gives that opportunity to high school students to learn how to set something up.
Yeah, not everybody's interested in athletics. So this is another alternative for sure.
Hey, talking from experience.
Yes, absolutely. I mean,
Yeah,
the first to admit it. I was a good sprinter. That was about it.
I was good sprinting for different reasons, but
Yes.
that's how I got to dodge sometimes. How
Running
fast
away from, yeah,
can
exactly.
I go? How fast can I go in a short period? Just pump it, just move. But yeah, I mean, you hear a lot of people, that are closer my age, actually your age as well, talk about your experience in college regarding running the radio station.
Definitely. I became the manager actually at my college radio station. It was a great time of my life.
Yeah, and it's yeah, absolutely, right? So, if you're listening and you have a kid in high school that's interested in, making TVs and movies, definitely take advantage of the QATV internship program. It's a much more a formalized training, and it puts kids behind an actual real camera, not just, something they can hold in their hand.
Exactly. Yeah, it's a whole different experience for sure.
Mm.
Only about 5 minutes left, but we should, I guess, talk about national politics a little bit. There's a lot to talk about there.
Yeah, sure. I mean, I was at the Governor Gretchen Whitmer event last Friday, and posted by Jamie Murphy, our friend in Weymouth, the rep from Weymouth. And it turns out that he and her went to law school together in Michigan.
Oh, wow, small world.
Very small world. And it was very impressive. I like the fact that she didn't just like read off the script like you've watched on television on Zoom. If you've been to any kind of campaign dish, it's like, okay, just reading the script now. You're not actually like talking to the audience.
Right.
And this was a fundraiser, and it was like well past 300 people at the UMass Club. I heard they are still bringing in money. They're going to get into six-digit level raising for her PAC. And she actually spoke to the audience, meaning she knew who was in the room. It wasn't like the rah-rah, kind of like thing you see on television, just
It's generic, yeah.
generic beyond the script. She actually talked to us. You felt like she understood why we're here, and was able to give a succinct description of herself and where this campaign is going, and also had a little fun at Jamie's expense, which was audience like that actually, because we're all friends of Jamie.
Right.
So she showed she could have a little fun with people as well and not be too stiff, so to speak. And she made time for pictures. She made time to everyone get, a quick picture in and kept the line moving. So very, very impressive. Don't know what the future holds for different folks. She's obviously not a vice presidential candidate. I mean, clearly looking for a white male. The North Carolina governor has pulled himself out of contention this morning for vice
Right. Yeah,
president.
that surprised me. Yeah.
Yeah, which kind of narrows it down to potentially three. I think Kelly is probably not a front runner. Astronaut, military, Arizona, famous wife, Congresswoman Gifford, Giffords.
That's right. Yeah, you got it right. Yep.
And fairly moderate, able to get policy under his belt, very much more everyman approach to life. I was kind of skeptical because I wouldn't take anyone from two places from the West Coast, but but who knows? I mean, I could be completely wrong. Maybe he'll be surprised coming up.
Well, and I mean, he's significantly older than Kamala Harris also.
He is, which I actually did mention when I was talking to Stales News Service, which the necessity of being able to talk about cross-generational.
Yeah.
I actually would prefer going younger than older, to be honest. Even if it's other Gen Xer like myself, I am a Gen X. People tend to forget that about me. And rather even someone in their 50s or even early 50s or mid 50s makes a lot of sense in my mind because you can kind of talk between generation, particularly moving to the lower end of the 50 scale like myself. So you can kind of like bridge that generation conversation. But also, honestly, it gives, and it's happening, it gives her enormous press coverage and scrutiny for the next basically 4 weeks as there's new energy and interest by the public in general on a new but old face, kind of weird conversation because no one really sees a vice president that much.
Right.
And
That's true for any vice president, really.
oh, well, yes, unless you're like Dan Quayle, who had the potato potato situation.
There was that. That's
Which is a shame because if you look at Dan Quayle's political history, the guy's a hustler. He's actually very intelligent. He just
right.
got caught with a spelling snafu. By the way, I can't spell. You put me in a spelling bee, it's not good. So, George W. Bush got caught in one of those as well, right? So these little like human problems get magnified, and she's going to have some of these real human things happen, and it's going to get magnified.
Yeah, they're making a big issue about her laugh, which is kind of weird to me, but whatever.
Yeah, I think the decorum issue is something she needs to work on just a little bit. I mean, everybody's different, and we can't change who we are. I never recommend changing who we are, but anyway, I think a lot of this professionalism, something even I've learned over the years, I continue to learn. Right, how to approach different situations properly and how to read a room, right? Some days I can be, all, crazy and fun, and other days this is much more solemn and serious. And when I give talks to different groups, I have to be very aware where I am and who I'm talking to. And I also talk to non-English speaking groups too, like regarding the State Department's group that came in from Latin American countries. I had to use a near simultaneous a Spanish translator. So I had to pick my words carefully for translation purposes, and there was a delay in my ability to answer questions. So, you got to learn how to, pick the moment. So, but on the flip side, Republican campaign will be scrambling to do anything it takes to get media attention, meaning doesn't matter how crazy it sounds, they're going to say it. Because they are fully aware it's sucking the life out of the room right now on the media attention, and that'll shift again. And one of the funny things that presidential races that some of you may be aware of is that when there's a presidential convention, after the convention, the presidential candidate gets about a 5% bump in the polls.
Yeah, the
That's
convention bump. It's yeah, absolutely. Yep.
people read way too much into that, right? Oh, they got a massive lead. I'm like, it's the convention bump. It
Right.
just happens. There was no convention bump after the RNC. There was not that 5 to 7% national poll just bump out. Would it be one after the DNC in the dog days of August? And I'm very skeptical there will be one. You might see a 2 or 3% bump, but I hard pressed to see a 7 to 10% bump.
Yeah, people just aren't paying that much attention right now.
Yeah, I think they are, but I don't think you're right. They're not taking the volume of people taking attention is not the same.
Right. Yeah. And
So.
really, polls, you can have a poll do anything you want it to, really.
But it's also who's actually picking up the phone.
That too, yeah.
This is the problem today's polling is that, less than half of America has a landline. And yeah, you're right. That's how you ask the questions. You and I have been doing this a long time. We're very aware of how polling works, right? It's not as cut and dry as people think it is. And when I get polling data from various industries, and they actually will show us the questions.
Ah, that's helpful. Okay, yeah.
So when I review if an industry comes in with their polling, or I want to see your questions, they actually do have the questions. So I can evaluate whether this question is something someone can understand in a short period of time, and whether it's a recorded polling or it's a human polling, whether someone called you or electronic voice, you get different responses, right? So
Right.
obviously we use very reputable polling, in terms of universities and news media. But again, it's kind of one of those things where I wouldn't get too serious about it because it's so much more difficult to get polling data from folks. And don't use like Change Online or Change.org and those kind of things. That is not
It's
great.
not an accurate depiction. No, not at all. No.
Absolutely not. Those are the because I get a lot of those Change.org stuff at the office, and that is not an accurate depiction of the public. So it's kind of like we'll wait and see. But I think there is more attention now paid by the public because between the assassination attempt of former President Trump and now the Vice President Kamala Harris has entered the race and all this pundits and controversies and analysis and all these things have come into play. And then you're right about her net laugh and they've gone scrutinize everything she did from time she was an AG and just all these things are going to come forward. And you're right, I think people are not paying that level of attention, but I think more people paid attention now than they did before because they had two consecutive instances that are unprecedented in well, definitely the vice president being the nominee.
Right.
Also an assassination attempt, first time since Reagan in 81.
Yeah. And the president bowing out of the race, that alone.
Yeah, so that creates a bit more attention for a while. And then the DNC will create some attention. But after Labor Day is when the gun goes off on the last 100 days, it's really more like the last like 75
Really is. Yeah, that's right.
that really make a break a candidate. And but record fundraising. Both of them have broke record fundraising this
Yep.
year.
Yeah.
President Trump broke fundraising, and then Vice President Harris broke fundraising, broke his number.
That's right.
So we'll see how it plays out. But I mean, you're on the Republican Party. I'm looking for any media attention, no matter how crazy it sounds, just to get media attention at all. And then if you're down ticket, this becomes an interesting problem because sometimes congressional candidates, I see it more in congressional than my local races. Congressional candidates tend to use congressional races as a referendum against the sitting president. And now you actually don't have a sitting president. So you don't have that kind of like, I'm really running against Joe Biden, even though I'm running, Joe Catalano's on the other side of the ticket, right? And that's what normally would happen. Now it doesn't. Now it changes your messaging. And that really, both Democratic and Republican parties, they have your message shift at the local level of, what you're really talking about. Again, we're in Massachusetts, so we're in a little bubble here.
That's why it's kind of fun actually in the bubble, because you can sit inside and just look at what the rest of the world's doing.
Yeah, but you also take it for granted that that we're the norm.
Right.
We are not the norm. Again, I remind folks, I worked in Martha Coakley Scott Brown race. We had that winter in January where it felt like a presidential election and everybody was angry.
Yeah.
Really angry about it. Because all like, oh, we want to be a swing state. Well, that 4 week period during the Scott Brown Martha Coakley race for the US Senate, that is what a swing state feels like. It is
Right.
horrible.
Yeah, you get bombarded.
Yeah, so I mean, if those of you who are old enough to remember that, don't ask to be a swing state. So, that we'll see how it goes. Like I said, anything can happen. I'm one of those folks that believes that politics is anything can happen, nothing's set in stone, and things can change in a blink. But, I do think that in the near term, right, there's a huge strategic shift in both parties trying to figure out how to manage, the next part of the election cycle. And again, it's downhill ballot races in tough areas, and abortion is on the ballot in many states, which is still a factor in my mind. And also President Biden, could get some wins on the foreign affairs issues, showing American strength overseas, which not everyone appreciates sometimes, because the world's a safer place because of the United States. And then stop, period. And then, the other side is domestically, GDP is at 2.8. The economy is right on schedule, being strong, but not overheated. CPI is down. And PCE,
Consumer
great.
price index.
Yeah, is still going down. Fuel prices look like they're going to go down because oil has not cracked $80 in a while. I think it's going to stay in the mid 70s, if not into the low 70s. So, despite a lot of use of vehicles on travel for vacation because people are flying less, gas prices are going down. And wages are not ticking as high as it used to be, but it's starting to flip. It looks like wages will start to get ahead of inflation for the first time in, like, since before the pandemic. We had gotten used to that wages were ahead of inflation for like too long. And now we had that go the other way. Now it looks like it's going to flip. So, generally, the party that's incumbent and things are going good at home. And if foreign affairs is going good, that's a bonus round as the incumbent party. Generally speaks well because people think of the pocketbook first at home. Things are good at home, and you get bonus rounds foreign affairs.
Absolutely. It's that time, Techie.
Yeah, it's 12:09, so we're a little bit over normal, but I think you got a good 55 minutes in today. So it's I'll be at the State House, room 42, 617-722-2370, 617-722-2370. The State House is open except for holidays, so definitely come to do a tour, to plan time in the summer to bring your kids in and family and come enjoy the building. I very much encourage it. The tours are free, by the way, just to let you know. It's a free tour to State House. We got MALegislature.gov, we're live streaming our sessions. And given the fact there's still a bunch of conference committee and bills moving back and forth between the branches, you can monitor it there. Strongly encourage folks to visit the state website, the legislature's website. TACI.org is the reference pages. I do get some folks that send me constituent requests through that page, which is nice. It means people show up. At Tacky Chan is the X account, and State Representative Tacky Chan is me and my pictures of wherever I've been. People seem to like pictures. And of course, QATV with Joe in the morning. You get your 10-minute fill-in, as well as seeing us on a near-weekly basis, depending on our scheduling. If Joe wants a follow-up, I'm happy to do an evening call tomorrow.
I'll be asleep, Techie. But next week should be soon enough.
Yes, so I'll see it about 1 or 2 weeks, depending on it is. I'm hoping to take a breath in the first couple of weeks of August.
All right, sounds good. We'll check in again soon.
Talk to you soon, Joe.